Hello, this is Faye Emerson with another story in the series called Crossroads. Today's story is about someone we'll call Stella, or it could be called The Lady and the Spy. The spy part of the story took place during the Second World War, and it began just outside an aircraft factory where Stella was working.
They had a luncheonette, like a diner, you know, for the boys and girls to stop in before going into the plant. And in the plant, they have a wagon from the cafeteria come around for your sandwiches at lunch or anything you want. So I used to stop for my coffee every day as I got off the bus before I came in the plant. So I sat on this little round stool there, and a gentleman was standing next to me, and I kind of looked at him, and I thought, something struck me funny. I didn't know what it was at the time. And I looked at him, and all of a sudden, he gave the man in back of the counter a certain expression, and his heels just clicked, a real loud click. So they shook hands, and the fellow in back of the desk said, "Why didn't you say that before?" So they must have passed some kind of a sign. I don't know what it was.
Well, Stella went back into the plant and thought about what she'd seen. It might be something. It might be nothing. But all the same, she went to the security officer and told him a story. The security officer asked her if she would go up to the FBI office, and of course she agreed.
I went up in the FBI office, and they sit at a desk, and they have a drawer that they record everything you say, you know, and this little thing goes around and around while you're talking. And I told him what I heard. He said, "All right, you go back to your machine as if nothing happened." He said, "Do you know where the man is?" I said, "I don't even know whether he's in the plant or not. But I said, I'll find out in a couple of days." So across, my machine was here, and just catty-corner was the supply room where they gave you different tools to work with. And I talked to the man opposite and waved and all. All of a sudden, I see this man that I saw in the diner come down from the aisle past me and go straight down. So I ran over to the man in the tool shop, and I said, "Oh, for goodness sakes, is he here?" I said, "I know him. What's his name again? I'm sure I know him from New York." I said, "What is his name?" And he gave me his name. I said, "Where does he work? I'm going over to see him and have a family chat with him." "Oh, he's in department so-and-so on tool number so-and-so." He gave me all the information I wanted. That's all I wanted. I went back. I never saw the man before until that day. And I went back to the FBI again and reported it. Well, you know, he was burning up a lot of the housings and a lot of the fixtures that went into the airplanes, and we caught him making fires. And that was a very man.
A professional spy setting out to sabotage aircraft, and waiting for him at the end of his trail, Stella. Now, who was this Stella? Where did she come from?
I'm born here in New York City. I did professional work, singing. I studied for Grand Opera. And I happened to be Eva Tangri's prima donna for a while. I was supposed to go to Italy and finish my education when the war broke out. And mother and father were supposed to go with me. I got married and threw everything to the winds. And that's why I haven't been in the Metropolitan today. That's where I belonged, with a voice on the order of Rosa Ponsellas. It really was a big, dramatic soprano voice. But I just ruined my future by getting married. I didn't regret it, because I had a wonderful husband. And I have only worked these last, 10-12 years. I haven't worked. I've been married. I'm a widow. And I've had my own home. My husband made good money, and I didn't have to until these last years. I had 3 brothers and another sister. And my parents happened to be well-to-do at the time. Dad lost his money in the panic. He, speculator. He bought from a diamond to a building and sold it. And that's how he made his money and came back again and into money. And that's all. He'd buy anything. He dealt with Bantines. He dealt with Berlues on Fifth Avenue. And he bought anything that were at least a little bit damaged on the counters, then he bought them up. Anything was a little shop-worn, and then he'd sell it.
And so, this lady in the aircraft factory, Stella, had started life as a singer, until she had to decide between a husband and a career. But wait,
I'm going to shock you now. I've been a widow 3 times. I was keeping that to myself. And that's how all these years passed on, see, from the first husband. I married a man that came from a wealthy family and that had money himself. He was in the merchant tailoring business on Fifth Avenue at the time when Fifth Avenue was real good down around 28th Street. The cheapest suit they made was $150, $175 in those days. My second husband was an artist, and he made all the posters for the stars in those days for the Otis lithographing and for the Morgan lithographing, and then they copied from his originals. And that was, we had quite a few artists come out, and they were interesting people. But nothing, no, just a quiet home life is what I like best of anything.
Stella, as you can see, was well off, and everything must have seemed very secure indeed. Old age was something that she just wasn't thinking about. And then something happened, and her fortune began to change.
I lost 5 houses. I've had 5 houses. I owned a piece of property on West 6th Street and Avenue O. I owned 4 houses in Brooklyn. I owned another one that I built myself, which was in the papers all over. I had it copyrighted so nobody could steal the idea because my husband was an artist, the second husband. And I gave that up because they scared me out of it.
A small fortune beginning to slip away, and then, as so often happens, it turned into a landslide. How did she lose it all?
Oh, by just trying to resell and losing money all the time. And I took my husband's advice, and he didn't know a thing about real estate. I shouldn't have listened to everybody. That's the trouble with me.
Her second and third husbands died. The money was gone. When war broke out, Stella, like so many others, got a job in a war plant. But after the war, her services were no longer needed. She had no savings, and now no one to turn to.
I thought I'd like to be in the cosmetic field for a while, selling cosmetics. In fact, there was a young lady there, and she said, "You do well selling cosmetics. Why don't you come over?" So she called the manager over, and he said, "Oh, sure." He said, "You live right across the street. It would be wonderful." He said, "Go down." He gave me the address, and he gave me the gentleman's name, whom I've forgotten right now. So I went down there, and we sat down. We had a lovely little chat. So he said, "When do you want to start working?" I said, "As soon as possible." He said, "All right, you can start Monday." And I turned to leave, and I said, "Thank you." And we spoke about salary. Everything was fine. But just as I went to go out, he said, "We've had such an interesting chat. The main thing I forgot to ask you, you've got to sign your application." So I thought immediately, oh, he's where I don't get the job. So he said, while you're signing, he said, "Tell the truth about everything," he said, "because we check up on you." So I handed back the application. I said, "That lets me out." He said, "Why should it let you out?" So I said, "Well, now I'll tell you. I was in hopes of getting out before you ask me my age." He said, "How old are you?" He said, "That ought to make no difference." I said, "I'm 65. Oh, he said, "I'm so sorry." He said, "I'll tell you a little story. I'm the head of this office. I'll be 65 next month. I have to quit. Our rule here is that the minute we reach 65, we have got to retire." Now, you see what telling age does. That's what I'm bringing out. It's an awful thing to get a job once you're 60 and over. Up to 50, it might be all right. But once you say 60, it's you see them look at you, and it's no good.
65. A frightening age in one respect. But in another respect, it was good. All through the time she worked in the war plant, small deductions had been made from her checks. Stella hadn't thought much about them, but those deductions, plus her employer's contributing payments, were going into Stella's Social Security account. To Stella, in the old days, those were just words. Who would have thought, at the time when she owned apartment houses, that security would ever be a problem for her? But now, at 65, retirement benefits could begin, and none too soon.
As I say, I couldn't ask for more, and it's a godsend, because it really, if you had to go out and get an apartment, or you know that that check is going to pay for the roof over your head, so it stops you worrying.
Today, Stella works as a part-time matron in a small hotel. With this, and her Social Security, she manages nicely. And her work is important to her.
I look after the rooms, see that people are comfortable, see that they're clean, see that the linens are all right, check on the maids every day, and check people in, check people out. That's why I think I like this job, you know, because it's before the public. You're meeting different people all the time. It's very interesting. And it's really interesting. I sometimes just sit in the lobby and watch the different people come in, the different types and what they say and do, you know. It's really interesting. It's very nice. I like it. One complaint I have, they're feeding me too good there. No wonder I'm putting on that much weight. My goodness sakes. They don't like to take anything back to the kitchen, you know, so I don't dare return it. And they give me all the ice creams and everything. Everything I shouldn't have, they give me.
Activity and pride. For with her social security and her part-time job, Stella can add to her life the details which are so important.
It helps you keep looking nicely, too, because if you don't use it all, it gives you a few dollars extra to buy clothes or shoes or whatever you might need. It is. It's a wonderful thing. Because the minute they know that you're 60 and over, it's an awful thing. I tell you, I'll be 69 next month. I don't feel it. I really don't feel anything like it. Unless these accidents happen and take it all out of me for a while, but they're not going to keep me down.
So, that's the story of the lady and the spy. Now, most of us never catch a spy. But most of us do get to be 65. And that's why it's important to understand one's rights and obligations under Social Security. So, listen to the Commissioner of Social Security, Mr. Charles I. Shotland.
Today, 9 out of 10 working Americans and their families are protected by Social Security. Many kinds of workers who in previous years were not covered are now earning this protection. Farmers and farm workers, for instance, household employees, and many self-employed professional people. If your work was covered for the first time in January 1955, be sure that you have a Social Security number. If you're self-employed, find out about the Social Security reports you will be filing with your income tax each year. And find out about the protection you are building for yourself in your old age and for your family in case of your death. Ask your nearest Social Security office for your free copy of the booklet, Your Social Security.
Thank you, Mr. Shotland. This is Fay Emerson, and this is the series Crossroads. Stories from the files of the Social Security Administration. Crossroads is produced for the United States Department of Health, Education, and Welfare by the Center for Mass Communication at Columbia University. Stella's story was edited by Robert S. Green. Thank you.